Okay, well, now that we're being recorded, I have to congratulate everyone, and federal government will be processing their grants accordingly, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. So, but first of all, we want to hear from what's happening in Washington and HMTRI. So, Heather, any news?
All right. Well, hello and good day to everybody. Thank you guys for joining us. We're excited to hear from you all. So as you guys saw and heard, the EPA has announced, HQ announced the newest recipients of the fiscal year 21 EWJT Awards. And so I'm going to leave Mike to talk about who all that is and talk to you guys a little bit more about that. But that was kind of the big news from HQ that came out since the last time we all met and talked. So we will kind of talk a little bit more on those things. Now, there is, a couple other things we do want to talk to you guys about. You know, one thing, and I know I've been kind of repeating myself every week, it seems like that, or every time we get together. But one thing that we do always share is the National Brownfields Conference. So the National Brownfields Conference will be held September 27th through the 30th in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And that, for more information on that, you can visit brownfields2021.org. Again, that's brownfields2021.org for more information. But that is for the National Brownfields Conference. And you can put that on your calendars, get that marked down. That's a great opportunity to explore, network, and really have some great sessions that really showcase employers and other learning opportunities with EPA staff. It's a really, really interesting and fantastic event. Now, to make it even more special and interesting, though, we like to hold a special EWJT event at the beginning of it. We did it for the first time in 2019, and we are looking at doing that again for 2021. So something that is special just for the EWJT folks. So we're looking at holding a affiliate event is what it's called, but a special meeting just for our folks to get together and talk and have specific topics that are related just to our type of thing. So we're going to have a meeting for that. And then we are also going to have a booth. We are looking at having a booth during the National Brownfield Conference as well. So HMTRI will deal with registration and actually deal with getting the booth, but what it's going to be is a booth for EWJT. So what that means is it's a spot for everybody to showcase their programs and what you guys do and all those, all your different graduates and your programs. So it's a way to kind of showcase your program on a national event. So we'll kind of talk to you guys more about it as it goes along, but just know that we're going to be, looking for different folks to help staff the booth, as well as different folks to help with different types of facilitators, not only for the National Brownfields Conference when we have our meeting, but also for our all-grantee event. So our all-grantee meeting, now this is a great opportunity to talk about environmental workforce development and job training. So our all-grantee meeting will be virtual again this year, and it is going to be held May 4th through 6th, from 12 to 3 p.m. Eastern, and it'll be virtual via Zoom. So again, that's May 4th through 6th, 12 to 3 p.m. Eastern, virtual via Zoom. But we'll probably stay late and hang out afterwards and just kind of have an opportunity to network and showcase some things too. So you can kind of make that 3 p.m. with a question mark afterwards if you so desire. So we're looking forward to having a great time with that as well. So be sure to put that on your calendar. And keep an eye out on the listserv. We'll push out more information as that becomes available. But we are in the process of getting our schedule figured out, our topics figured out. So if you have an interest in participating or would like to help out and lead a topic and really help facilitate sessions or anything like that, send us an email. We would love to get you on the list for that. You can send it to hkballou@eicc.edu, and I'll get you pushed out to the right person to kind of continue that conversation. They'll be Steve, but we'll get you pushed out to that right information out there. So again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu. But again, mark that on your calendar, May 4th through 6th, 12 to 3 p.m. Eastern, and that'll be the all-grantee meeting.
Yes, good morning. Good afternoon. This is Hugo Prieto from ECA.
Great. Great. Welcome to the PLC, and we're just getting started. So,
all right. Yes.
Now, right, over the last, Heather, anything else?
No, I was just going to turn it back over to you, so perfect
okay.
timing.
Well, you know, we've kind of been in the funk for the last year. A year ago, we did our first COVID scan of our grantees and how are you doing, where are you at, are you doing anything, you know, a call out. And, of course, things were pretty bleak then. Well, we can't get into our facility. Our school is closed. Our offices are closed. We've got public mandates. We can't do anything. There are exceptions. Recycle Force, who is an essential industry, was to keep going. A few were able to keep going, depending on their local conditions. By and large, it's been a tough time. Some had not started their cohorts, and that was good. They were able to delay those. Some were planning their cohorts. The ones that had most difficult time were the ones that were halfway through or at a critical point in their training. A couple of those had some difficulties trying to go ahead with some sort of graduation before everything clamped down. We went through that summer, and it was pretty rough, as we all know. We did another scan in December to see, you know, how are things going? And things started to change. I think people were starting to adapt. They were trying to do different strategies. Some were trying to do hybrid training. They were starting to distance. They were able to do outdoor training. Their facilities were enlarged, or they found different facilities. They basically adapted in one form or another. They reshifted their schedules around, delayed some things. But by and large, we're trying to do the best they could under COVID. And now here we are a year later, amazingly. We're starting to come out of this funk a year later. And we're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. We kind of culminated this with a webinar instead of the last PLC a couple weeks ago on in-person training. And Renee and Libby and Ken facilitated that webinar and told us some of the strategies that they're employing. They did a great job, and I want to compliment them and thank you for the work you've done, the strategies that you have worked out and made work. We also did a Connect issue, which we'll put in the notes, a reference to where we identified our first scan, our second scan, and some of the strategies that our grantees started to employ, and some of the conclusions. I think in general, and some of you may or may not agree with me, but we think in general that for our target group, in-person is essential, necessary. Some more advanced programs were able to do some hybrid training. Many programs pointed out, heck, our participants, we're lucky if they have phones, and if we could keep those phone numbers current, let alone computers. Others, for example, Recycle Force, some of the others had computers in their facilities, and they were able to separate them, put barriers up, and do some computer work and do a combination of some hybrid training that way. By and large, I think most of our grantees came to the conclusion we need to get back to person-to-person training, and we will, and that's what we'll do moving forward. And some will be affected. Their training, they may push more resources online. They may begin to screen a little differently. They may be looking for people who have computer skills or the ability to do some remote training. That's going to be an individual decision by each grantee if they decide they want to have a cohort where they're going to be doing some hybrid or distance learning or communications. They may require that their participants have internet capability or computer capability. That is solely up to the grantee. But in general, I think most are going to try to go back to their in-person training. Now, by going back to in-person training, a lot of improvements have been made. Most of the grantees have distance they're going to. The nice thing is that the public health concerns have eased up. And again, this is state by state, but the facilities are open back up. The restrictions have decreased. You need to wear masks. You need to be 6 foot apart. You may have 11 or 12 tables. They've had to find larger spaces. They may have installed HEPA filters. They're interviewing their people face-to-face, but with caution, whether it's face masks or a variety of different ways of keeping people apart. They're all doing testing to various degrees. But now what we see is we're starting to come out of this. And in the PLC, we want to start looking forward. Now, clearly, we're not, COVID isn't done. We wouldn't pretend to do that. We're still in the middle of this, and we're still having to intervene all these strategies that are developed during COVID. And we use the best of those strategies moving forward. But now we can start thinking about person to person and what can we do person to person. How do we interview? What are the size of our cohorts? What are our meeting spaces? Are we going to break down into two parallel sessions, or are we going to start increasing class size? Or are we going to play it by ear and then maybe consolidate them later? So these are all decisions that we'll be making forward. But now with the vaccines and the lightening of restrictions, we have a little bit more flexibility. Certainly in the area of the asbestos, Hazwoper, lead, where we have close contact, it's going to be a heck of a lot easier now to work with some of those programs. So I'm going to leave it at that and say, you know, we've done this. We've gotten through COVID. I really hate to jump the gun and like to say we're past the worst of it, but I want to be looking forward now. And we're going to be talking about the next grant and strategies for that. But does anyone want to recap their experiences over this last year and how they're, do they feel they're out of it, or are we still deep in this COVID training issue?
I may would like to recap a little bit for ECA at Philadelphia, PA. We were for a long time doing Zoom training, and right now we are doing a hybrid. So we have 2 days face-to-face with the students with limited amount of students. Our facility is big enough to provide a space for 15 students following the COVID-19 regulations. And the other 3 days we are doing Zoom. So it has been good to return to the face-to-face with the students because they express the same feeling that you had, no? They needed that hands-on activities and be able to do the labs that they are required for their training. So we are looking for more students to be able to be face-to-face. So that's it.
Well, I think the nice thing is the new grantees and those who will be continuing and depending on the cohorts will be training in a new world where these restrictions are lightening up. And so that's going to, I think things are going to become a lot easier. Has anyone had any issues with the regional coordinators or with EPA regarding this delay, or have they just been quiet?
With EPA, do you say?
Yes. Has anyone been contacted by EPA in terms of delays or deliverables or anything regarding their training? This would be for existing grantees.
I think they've been really considerate here in Region 6 because I haven't been able to get into my building even, you know, to get the records and stuff.
Hi, this is Fred.
And the amazing thing about Janet is, Go ahead.
This is Fred over Richmondville. I want to echo what the other caller just said. EPA has been very considerate and understanding during the whole pandemic, and they have been great supporters and great to work with and be understanding. We haven't had any outbreaks here, but we have required, and we have been running classes at half capacity because that's kind of, we have enough space to do that, but we've been able to provide masks and gloves and temperature checks every day. So, but EPA at the same time has been very understanding with the half enrollment, like half the class sizes here at Richmondville.
I think that's good news. No news is good news from EPA. I think they are very understanding, and I think they'll continue to be that way. Now, shifting gears to EPA, let's talk about these new grants and what's going on forward. A little background, when you talk about this program, of course, it goes way back, but I'll go back to 2016. We had only 7 awards in 2016. Before that, it was around 5. In 17, we went to 6. And then people were spurred at EPA. In 2018, we jumped up to 18 grantees. Then in 2019, they skipped. And 2019 was a scary year for us because there was a question. This has traditionally been an annual, and I think what makes it good, it's an annual award that allows people to get in. It's not a long award, 3 years, but it allows newcomers to come in and build a program. And if they're fortunate enough to re-up their program, they can re-up as many times as they want. And so it's a very nimble program, not a large one, but we've kind of taken pride in saying it's a good starter program, and often it allows you to find other grant sources, whether it's NIHS, Department of Labor, it might be a state program, philanthropic organization, but it gets you the ability to get a program going, build your organization, and demonstrate results, and hopefully continue that, but also at the same time perhaps attract much larger fish that will support your program. So in 2018, we had 18. 2019, they were debating whether they were going to go to 2 years, and they were convinced to go back to 1 year. Well, they skipped 2019. Then what they did is they switched the schedules around, and they did a early 2020, and they had 26 grantees in 2020. Now, this is good and bad, and I'll tell you why in a second. Then, of course, this year, there were 18 awards awarded. And congratulations to you all. East of the Mississippi seems to win out. There were 14 east of the Mississippi, only 4 west of the Mississippi, which is strange. Often the West Coast will do well. In the 2020 awards, it was about evenly split. The split is new, about 30%, which is about what new awardees are, and about 70% many re-ups. One thing that we tell everyone on these awards, whether you've been accepted, rejected, whatever we say, they try to make it objective, but unless you can do an in-person presentation and they can visit your program, it's really hard to determine how good a program is. So they come out with the threshold criteria and the evaluation criteria, depending how good your writing is, how much time you had to write your grant. Those all are factors that help determine whether you get the award. In fact, if they know too much about your program, they recuse themselves. So it makes it really difficult to assume that I've got a good program. I know I do. I'm doing great work, and I should get refunded. And unfortunately, it's that way. And we've seen, and it breaks my heart, and we've got four 2017 awardees who were last awarded in 2017. We're going to lose them. Now, we call them alumni. And one of the things, and in 2018, we have four that were last awarded in 2018, so there's eight people there that are kind of operating on fumes. Now, we do suggest everyone, whether or not you got it, to re-up and go for a re-up. And I'm not sure because I'm not on the I have no influence on evaluation, but they probably look at the same numbers that I look at and awardees, and hopefully they'll see an alumni that did a great job, has a great program, and they'll bring them back. And our hope is to encourage those people to write a proposal that would be fundable. Well, what they might say in the evaluation committee is, you had some great programs that you're telling us should have been funded, but they just weren't good enough to pass our minimum requirements. So they didn't dot all the I's and cross the T's is what happens, what they're saying. So you not only, I hate to say it, almost more important than having really a good program in reality is having a really good grant that dots all the T, dots all the I's, crosses all the T's, well-written, is coherent, and tells them everything they want to hear. And that's what you got to do. And sometimes it takes one or two rejections. For those of you who this was your first try, we used to tell grantees that it takes 2 to 3 tries. And if you were not funded, you definitely, and we'll be talking about this in the notes and in other PLCs, you definitely want to make an appointment with your regional coordinator. You'll be getting a notice, and you'll want to go over the notes. What were your deficiencies and what do you need to work on? And you definitely want to indicate that you're going to reapply for the next year and just kind of hang on, keep your team together, and see where your weak points are. And as we go over the ranking and the threshold and the ranking criteria in the next series of PLCs, you want to make sure you do as thorough a job you can and be consistent for what they're looking for, so that when they use those evaluation criteria, they're going to be able to check the boxes and you'll get the next re-up. Now, that brings us up to the next, when's the next RFA, request for applications. That's what we used to be hounding them about, when's the announcement going to be made and when's the announcement going to be. Now we're hounding them about, when's the RFA coming out. And when you back these dates up, it takes about a year to get one of these grants. I mean, think about it. Those of you who were funded just last week, you sent your you sent your applications in, say the announcements were in summer of 20, and you sent in your proposals, and then they started evaluating the proposals. The awards weren't made now till May of 21. You've got, one of the problems is when they make the announcement, you only have 60 days to respond. This is an issue I have with EPA. They will also acknowledge it takes about 6 months to write a good proposal from start to finish. If you're going to develop partnerships, it takes a long time. So we're going to be starting early. We know there will be an announcement probably this summer, because if you back the dates up, they're going to want to get that announcement maybe in August so they could get the awards out next spring as they did this year. And excuse me, the reason they have to make the announcements in the May or June is it takes about 2 to 3 months to finalize your paperwork. I was kidding when we first came on whether they wanted their money in 20s and a brown paper bag or suitcase, but actually from the point at which those announcements are recommendations for funding, the actual money doesn't really start until you sign the paperwork. And there's, you know, you have the announcement, you have the date of the award, you have a project period, which is 3 years. And then you have a budget period, and that budget period is what you're concerned with. The clock starts to tick. And, of course, after that, every 3 months you're doing progress reports, and you've got 3 years after that. That budget period has to be before September 31st, end of the fiscal, for them to get the money out the door. So those of you who just got an announcement that you were accepted, are going to be in the next couple of months working with EPA to finalize your work plan, work your budget out, get your bank account set up, so you'll be ready to go. And somewhere between April and probably August, you'll be ready to go to start your new grant and start writing checks. So that's kind of the schedule. And we'll, of course, we'll put those notes in the post-session notes. And if you're not getting post-session notes, just email your contact information to Heather, HKBALLOU@EICC.edu, and we'll make sure you're getting the notes. So what am I getting at? I'm getting at the fact, two things. One, we had in 2020, 26 grantees won awards. And 2021, we had 18. When this RFA goes out, the FY22 RFA, which will come out towards the end of the summer, there will be 26 programs that will be competing for whatever number of new grants they decide to grant. Now, if they decide to grant more than 26, that's great. If they do 30 or whatever. If for any reason they start to drop, or if they stay at 18 or go to 20, there's going to be pretty intense competition for re-upping for those grantees. So what this says is those of you who have 2020 awards needs to start to get your act together and start thinking about the FY22 competition. And start preparing now and start maneuvering yourself for a application that will be sent out towards this end of the summer for your re-up. And you'll want to reposition yourself. You want to get your act together. Make sure if you're an existing grantee, you want to make sure that your quarterly reports are in order. Everything's up to snuff. Things are looking good. And then you'll want to see what you need to do to expand the program that you're now providing. So we have, moving forward, we have something for everyone. We have, for those new funded programs, we've got to talk about how you want to set up your terms and conditions to work for you. This is a great time for new grantees to tweak their work plans to suit themselves. You'll be signing off on new budgets, a chance to look at that budget again. You're going to be, and we'll be talking about this in future PLCs, you're going to have to, if you're a new grantee and new funded, you may want to reassess your partners and get them back in shape. If you are not funded, don't take it personally, basically. They'll run their money out. They had enough for 18 grants, and they try to rank them based on the responses to those ranking criteria. And once they hit 18, there was a cutoff, and you might miss by just a few points, unfortunately. We have many stories where they say, I missed by 2 points. You know, I just didn't make it. And what we say is, definitely reapply, so you're going to be well above, on the curve, you're going to be above the cutoff. So if you were not funded, get your paperwork together and get your team together. And, of course, you could tell them about the news. And not so good news that you weren't funded, but the good news is that you're planning on re-upping, and we don't have a lot of time to improve our grant. We're aiming at the end of the summer to apply for a new grant. Definitely sit down with the regional coordinator, find out where your weak points were, what you need to do to expand your grant, and look for a very critical review if you can get it. You'd be lucky if they'll give you a really critical review of that. Of course, then you're going to want to look at your grant and look, and on our future PLCs, we'll talk about these critical issues that conform to the way they evaluate the grants and make sure you deliver more than you think you should. And by all means, begin early. While you only have 60 days to respond, by the time they announce this, you should be ready to start writing. And all the groundwork and all the prep work that we'll be talking about in future PLCs, the labor market assessments, the community assessments, all of that stuff takes time, and definitely the partnership development takes lots and lots of time. So again, it's not too early. If you were either an unfunded grant or you are a 2020 grantee, this is where I would go. We gotta get through COVID. That's a given, but our focus here now is keeping and expanding our grantees, our 2020 grantees, and those that weren't funded up until now. So we'll put all these things in the notes, and you can, if you have any questions, you can write us, respond to the email, the notes, or write Heather. Does anyone have any questions? Has anyone gotten their package from the regional coordinator? I think it's too early, but the old grantees probably got a phone call, but has anyone gotten their package yet?
No, I haven't,
no,
but we did do our...
One anecdotal story is they're going to contact different places. Do it in the old days. This is such a big deal that they'd call the congressman first, and the congressman would call, perhaps if it was a college, he would call the dean of the college or the president or whoever of the organization. In some cases, they would call. In almost all cases, it'll go to the contact person on the grant. One story about that is in one case, the organization got the grant, but the person who was the contact information person left and did not leave paperwork behind, just kind of left. And when they got the grant, they went to call them and contact, they didn't know who to contact. They had problems getting hold of them. So you may want to touch base, look at, in every case, pull that grant out. You know, it's been a year. I mean, it's a long time. So pull that grant out and see what you promised. Another thing we tell people, the winners, congratulations, but oh my gosh, now you got to do the work. And it can be daunting, but pull that grant out and see what you promised. Look at the principal partners, and you may have to change some of those. The principal people doing the work and how they're budgeted, and pull all of that paperwork out and kind of refresh yourself to see where you're at.
Mike,
mm-hmm.
This is Janet at Santa Fe Community College. We had a regional publicity event with Region 6, and we had Representative Fernandez was on the call. The media was on the call. This was all last Thursday afternoon. I'm already getting phone calls and emails for people wanting to apply. And I've got to get with my EPA rep, and we'll do that next week. But we've already scheduled our first cohort for August 23rd through September 24th.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, in dire straits, you can go 90 days, I think, before the money. You know, you won't have authorization to spend money until they sign off. Now, the fact that we're early May, you can do all their paperwork in 2 months. Now, you're a pre-existing grantee, so it might not take you that long. They know who you are. So that is really cool.
Did you have firm any dates as to when they were expecting to release the money. I thought it had to be before September that they had to release the money because of the end of the fiscal year.
It absolutely has to be done by September 31st. It could be done any time between now and September 31st. But now what has to happen between now and then? Last year, they went up to the wire. They were down to the week before. I mean, it was a couple of weeks before they had to get all these grants out. I think this year they learned and they said, let's get these things out early. What they have to do is they have to approve. You now shift from your regional coordinator to the grants people, and they're going to look at your work plan. And you've probably already got your accounts set up, your SAMS
yes.
accounts and all of that. So I think it's going to go faster for you. As soon as you get your package, you may want to jump on that. It could go anywhere from a month or two to 3 months, but April, May, June, you could conceivably get your money in June or July authorized to spend. A new grantee who is starting from scratch may be more like August, but that's usually about the time frame. So they're being pretty efficient. I was impressed that we got the announcements as early as we did. So I think you...
This is Pam. I work at ECA with UCO, and we had the same thing. We had an announcement with EPA and for Region 3, Gianna Rosati, and it was really nice the way she did it, because she let us know beforehand so we could invite our funders, our partners, our political leadership support to join us for the call. So it was really a nice way to begin.
That is really
nice.
Have
you started getting phone calls? Because that within 24 hours after that, I was getting phone calls and people coming forward saying they wanted to teach and all that kind of stuff.
That is great.
We're in Philadelphia, so we haven't gotten that, but I'll tell you, one of the state reps who joined us on the call, he contacted us after, and we're talking about a workforce grant. So it was very nice the way they told us before, and so we could send it out to our partners.
Depending on the local politics, it's interesting. Sometimes you'll end up with congressmen, and it's nice. They all handle it, and it's a special occasion, and I think it's nice what they do. I think last year where the city of New Bedford, he called me and he said, we're going to have the administrator here tomorrow, but we're not supposed to tell anyone. This was about a week before, 3 days before the announcements were made. We're not supposed to tell anyone what we're doing. He said, I think we got the grant. I said, I think you got the grant. So everyone does it a little differently. I don't know. Maybe the administrator went somewhere this year. They'll usually pick one out, and the administrator may do it. But it's fine with me. Go ahead.
I know they called me Wednesday before last Thursday, and you know, you look on your cell phone and you see you got a phone call from EPA, and you know that's never good, right? So I was in Los Alamos, so I had to pull over to the side of the road, crawl up a mountain to get enough bars to be able to return the phone call. And they're like, where are you? I said, standing on top of a mountain in Los Alamos trying to figure out what the EPA wants with me.
Now, you know, while we got Janice here, she's one of the success stories. We talk about this is a $200,000 3-year grant, but it can bring you other fortunes and other opportunities. I think Santa Fe is one of those cases. I think you've done very well in the last couple of years. But because of your hard work, you were able to demonstrate how you could develop a successful program, which I'm sure you had a lot of non-believers in Santa Fe.
Oh, yeah. Like my Secretary of Workforce Development, he didn't even know that environmental health and safety was a career path. They had not been collecting data on our you know, standard occupational codes, and that made my research for the grant very difficult.
And of course, now she's doing all kinds of things.
He thinks we're best friends. Yeah.
Of course. So, again, I say congratulations, all. We need to help these new grantees, which we'll be able to do at all grantee meeting, and hopefully we're going to get some of them on the call. And we need to focus on our 2020 grantees, the re-ups. We need to get everyone re-upped, and we'll be working on that too. Any other questions? Hopefully we'll all be out of the out of this COVID thing. Everyone get their shots yet? Just us old guys.
Fully vaccinated.
Excuse me.
Question for Heather.
Yeah, what is her email address?
Yes. Oh. Yeah, absolutely. My email is hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu.
Okay.
Okay.
hkballou@eicc.edu.
It's H, so it's Heather K. Ballou. So
hkballou.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
That's the person, if you want to complain about the program, just use her name. Well,
have a
good couple of weeks. Yes, sir.
This is Paul from Recycle Force. One of the things on these partnerships, and I know Ken mentioned it in the Zoom call a little while back, is that we're in the very early stages of developing a partnership with Homeland Security. And so, you know, our HAZWOPER 40 also includes radiation detection. So we were able to, and he offered training, trained about five of our gentlemen on site. And hopefully the partnership may turn into where we have a ready crew when they have potential incidents to go out into the community in Indy and evaluate specific sites or items. So we're excited about that, but extremely very early stages of that. And then your commentary about grant writing, we have a rock star for a grant writer, but takes a type of individual that, to your point, dots all the I's and crosses all the T's, and that's really helped us move forward with there. And again, reinforcing what you're saying with partnerships, we have a president of the Full City County Council in-house next week so they can get caught up from, you know, what our program is about. And one of the things we're really working on, because we're very successful at the large and small grants, but, you know, when you ride through the grants and you get to the lower periods, we have to tighten our belts, and our focus is trying to help as many participants as possible. So we're in a process of identifying a development officer that can start courting traditional philanthropy to fill in the gaps between those grants. And like I said, it's been a learning process for us, but we're really excited about the potential opportunities that we have. So it's good to hear everyone on the call, definitely.
You know, you bring up a good point, and we'll be talking about that in the PLC, but in pecking order, I would say the best funding, if you get legislative funding written into the state budget, that's gold. The next would be philanthropic, and then the next would be grants. Hopefully the longer the better, and then, of course, and then social enterprise that you're doing. So it is a big area of development. And one thing about the Environmental Workforce Program, it's not a mighty and huge program, but it gets you visibility. You can get, it's easy to get in the mayor's office. What could be better than training underserved, unemployed individuals in the community in a time when unemployment and disparities are so great? I mean, it's a it's a great program and could be funded at 10x than from what it is. EPA has never wanted to get it too large, but the principle of this program is phenomenal, and it could lead to a whole lot of leveraging, as you just described, whether it's philanthropic. We've had organizations that have said, we don't need your money anymore. Now, that was the one I'm thinking of was in New Jersey. They were getting legislative funds. Another one was one that was out of Boston that was getting philanthropic. They had a symphony night even. They were getting plenty of philanthropic funds. So it gives you an opportunity to get out there, but that does all take time. And I think you're on the right path, and if you can afford it, to get a development officer. Someone's got to get out of their comfort zone. Yeah, good point. Very good.
Yeah,
point.
And that just continues to market what we all do here on this phone call. And
right.
And we have a, from the mayor's office, we have a representative that comes from our mayor's office in our daily circle every week. And so, you know, they provide the mayor with what's going on in this side of the world, because right now, if we can get it legislated, and that's where the majority of the money is going to come from, and we have additional ties to the governor's office too. So if there's ever an opportunity for anyone to get on the governor's council on serving the underserved population, that's an awesome opportunity.
Yeah, you never underestimate a photo op, whether it's a photo op for an announcement or particularly a graduation. Always, we always say when it's that time and we talk about it, invite every representative you can. And if they don't, maybe they'll send a representative. Unless they're foolish, the smart ones will show up for that photo op. That's exactly right. Well, thank you, everybody, for this week. And March 7th after Easter will be our next call. So we'll
March
we'll
7th?
Get in. I'm sorry, April 7th. I'm thinking backwards. I had my COVID shots, but I ended up catching a cold right after that. I'm high on NyQuil right now, so excuse me. You all have a good day.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a good
Bye.
Day.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.